أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. It's safe to say that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he's at the top of the list. He'll make the top 10, if not the top 5, if not the top 3. It's something to think about. Of the list of people who have impacted history tremendously. Think about it. A world without Imam Hussein, how different it would be. A history without Ashura, Karbala taking place in it till today, how many things would be changed, would be different than what we're living in today? How many uprisings, movements have taken place just because Imam Hussein showed the way? It would be very different. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam is not limited to an individual. Imam Hussein, Karbala, Ashura is a package. It's a package full of gems that are unique. One gem, for example, is Lady Zainab and her role. Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam and his role. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas alayhi al-Akbar. Each of these gems is unique and separate and is doing something different than the rest. It's so cool and nice how this package works, what the contents of this package are. Imam Hussein on his own couldn't have created such an epic story. Everywhere you look, you see people playing a specific and peculiar and particular role to themselves. Some of these gems are the ashab of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. The gems that we find in this package, some of them are the companions of Imam Hussein who are also unique. And it's interesting how this is acknowledged in the ziyarat that the imams teach us. You seldom will find a comprehensive ziyarah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in which the ashab of Imam Hussein are not directly addressed in it. Do we find this in other ziyarat? Brothers, I ask you to look. Imam Ali had some very, very loyal companions, but we don't see in the ziyarat of Imam Ali alayhi salam and the other imams such an attention being given to their companions the way that we see in the ziyarah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What's the secret? What's the reason behind this? And can we do anything to also get a little bit close to this? Now, these gems are all unique. Each of them are different in their own way. But at the same time, when you look at these gems, one, put them next to each other, you will find that there are some common grounds too, and some common things amongst all of these companions. Now, when it comes to these commonalities, we can take heed, we can take lesson, and we can take inspiration from these individuals so that we can change our own lives, inshallah. So we want to talk a little bit about these companions and what made them so special, what was going on. I want to cover this, inshallah, by answering 5 questions. Number one, what is Ziyarat Ashura talking about when it says, As-salamu alayki ya Aba Abdullah, as-salamu alayki ibn Rasulullah, all the way till wa'ala al-arwah allati hallat bifina'ik, alaykum minni jami'an salamullah. When it says the souls that entered and landed in your garden, O Aba Abdullah, may Allah's salams be on them, who is it exactly talking about? That's one. Question number two, what lines do we have in our literature, Islamic literature, that imply that it's important for you to be connected somehow and to be somehow the companion of an imam? And what happens when this is not there and one fails to achieve such a thing? Number three, what did Imam Hussein have in him that caused people to come towards him? And number four, what did the companions have in them to be drawn towards Imam Hussein alayhi salam? And finally, which is of the utmost importance, of course, is that when it comes to me, what can I do to also become a companion of the Imam of my time, inshallah? We're going to cover these one after another. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. In Ziyarat Ashura, we read, وَعَلَى الْأَرْوَاحِ الَّتِي حَلَّتْ بِفِنَائِكِ. May the salams be upon the arwah, the souls that landed in your garden, O Aba Abdullah. Now this is very metaphorical and very poetic. And since it's not directly speaking about a certain individual or a certain set of individuals, there is a difference of opinion here. I just want to let us know. Some say that it's talking about the souls of the prophets and the angels that came on the day of Ashura. As you all know, we have many ahadith that talk about how the anbiya, the awsiya, the malaika, everyone is there on the day of Ashura. This is one of those turning points of man, of man's history and mankind, Ashura, that's taking place. And it's interesting. One of Ayatollah Bahjat's teachers, the late Ayatollah Muhammad Hussein Al-Asfahani, which was also known as Al-Kumpani. There was a reason why they would call him this. He is huge. He is a contemporary of the late Ayatollah Naini and others. He has a book of poetry. Now it's interesting, he's a marja for himself, but he has a book of poetry for the Ahlul Bayt. In one of these poems, he talks about a jinn who he saw in his dream, and he sees this jinn writing a name and then wiping it out with his tears or something along those lines. And he keeps writing it again, weeping until it goes away again. So he asks him, who are you? He says, I'm Ja'far Jinn. Now some of you might have heard this name before. He's a real person, Ja'far Jinn. So the story goes on like this, that Ja'far Jinn tells the story that I was there on Ashura. I came, I arrived, and I saw that, oh my God, the prophets are here, the angels are here, everyone is here watching the greatest sacrifice ever mankind can ever deliver. So I split through the people and I came through until I reached Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And I see Imam Hussein, his eyes are closed. I said, my master, I'm here to help you. And the Imam opens his eyes and he says, you're here to help me? I was right now speaking to my Lord. You got in the way of my love. I don't need your help. You think I can't do anything here? Leave me alone and leave me with my Lord. Long story short, this Ja'far Jinn who had come and probably had come with his followers has to leave the scene. Why? Because Imam Hussein doesn't want his help. And he is weeping for the rest of his life that he never got the chance to help Imam Hussein alayhi salam. The reason why I bring his name up, Rahmatullah alayhi, is for us to just, I just want to say this on the side, that we are not the only beings that are being tested in this life. There are other beings called the jinn as well. And I've heard from some of the great ulama myself personally, they said, yes, Ja'far Jinn passed away recently, but he was there in Karbala. Yes, the jinn, they live much longer than us, and they're much more powerful than us, but they also have some deficiencies. If you don't mess with them, they won't mess with you. They don't care about us that much. If you mess with them, according to those people who have, then they'll start messing back. Anyway, this has caused some to believe that وَعَلَى الْأَرْوَاحِ الَّتِي حَلَّتْ بِفِنَائِكْ means those souls of those greats that were there. But it's very simple. When you look at the context of the ziyarah, and you look at other excerpts of the ziyarah and other ziyarat, you find that yes, this is something that relates to the ashab of the imam and those, the souls of those companions of the imam who were buried next to him, who fought alongside him, these souls. And it's so poetic and beautiful how it says this, عَلَيْكُمْ مِنِّي جَمِيعًا سَلَامُ اللَّهِ. I don't know if we have anything like this anywhere else, where you put the imam next to other people and you send a salam to them as a group. Subhanallah, how high can you be? The hadiths that talk about the rank of these shuhada, the hadiths that talk about the rank of Abul Fadl Abbas and how all the other shuhada will envy him on the Day of Judgment, start making sense a little bit here. That the sacrifice that they made was so high that they are going to be put next to Imam Hussein, and as a group you're going to say salam to them together. Alaykum minni jami'an salamullah. Okay, let's move on to our second question now. What's so important about being a companion of an imam? Okay, we saw how high these individuals are. This one line of Ziyarat Ashura is enough to show how high they are. But let's see what Islamic literature, very shortly and briefly, says about individuals who have an imam, about individuals who don't have an imam. There's one very shaky, it shakes you, verse of the Quran, Surah Isra, verse 71. In a few words it says something, but this is very scary. يَوْمَ نَدْعُوا كُلَّ أُنَاسٍ بِإِمَامِهِمْ. On the Day of Judgment, everyone is going to be categorized, apparently, by their imam. Who's your imam? Who did you follow? They're not going to probably say, you. They're going to say, whoever's under this imam, come. What if I don't have an imam then? The other hadiths start making sense, that whoever has love for anything in this life, whether it be a stone, whether it be whatever, they will be resurrected with that. So we have to be careful to get our priorities straight first. يَوْمَ نَدْعُوا كُلَّ أُنَاسٍ بِإِمَامِهِمْ. There is a very much more loftier explanation to this verse. We're going to leave for some other time, inshallah. For now, we're looking at it at surface value, at face value. This is what the surface meaning is saying. That's number one. Another thing that we have. You look at the shuhada and the ziyarat that we have for the shuhada of Karbala. In some ziyarat, it says you point to the shuhada. What do you say? Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. Fuztum wallah. Fuztum wallah. Fuztum wallah. Ya laytani kuntu ma'akum fa'afuza fawzan azeema. If you're the companion of the right individual, what comes as a result and ensues is ultimate deliverance, ultimate felicity. All the good stuff in the ziyarah, you're telling them, good job, good job. Fuztum, you were successful. You made it. What a making. And I wish I was with you so I could have also reached such a high level. Why? Because of their companionship to the imam, who says not being a companion is okay. No, you have to be linked to somebody. And of course, it will bring baggage along with it, let me tell you. And we'll get to that. It comes with baggage. You can't just say, I love this imam, so I'm a companion, I'm set. Unlike some people, unfortunately. It shows that these people achieved their salvation through their companionship with the imam. And it also shows that those who didn't link themselves, they're doomed. Okay, so now what happens when you're the companion of the imam? Don't be shy, brothers. It's okay. When you're the companion of an imam, what happens is you get Jannah, straight up. On the Day of Ashura, you've heard this probably. There was one of the ashab, he's joking around as if nothing's happening, nothing's going wrong. As if the greatest tragedy of all time is not about to take place. Why are you so happy? Why are you joking around? Now is not the time to joke around. He says, but I'm just thinking about what's to come. And according to some narrations, the night before, Imam Hussein had showed them, each of them, their rank in Jannah and what's to come. He says, how can I not be happy? Why are we going to be shy about this? Why are we going to be ashamed of this? Yeah, we want Jannah. Yes. That's what I was created for. Jannah. Who says you're created for Jannah? Imam Ali says in the famous hadith. He says, your souls are worth Jannah. Trade them for Jannah. Don't settle for anything less. Don't go cheap on yourselves. But this isn't what I would say caused these individuals to move towards Imam Hussein necessarily. Jannah. There's something else in Imam Hussein. What is it that Imam Hussein has that everyone, or at least these individuals, were drawn towards? Our third question. Three things that I thought about. There's probably many, many more. I'm keeping it very basic. First of all, the lineage of this imam and the personality of this imam. Who cannot fall in love with Imam Hussein when he just looks at you and speaks to you? The nur of imama is the second thing that he has. Of course, people, as I said last night, didn't acknowledge the imama of this imam. But the point I'm trying to make is that you don't have to acknowledge his imama. Not everyone is Muslim ibn Aqil. Not everyone is Qais bin Musahhar. Have we heard of him? They say one of his messengers, Imam Hussein, was Muslim ibn Aqil. He sent to Kufa. But there's another one. That some say he was the first shaheed of the movement of Karbala. Qais bin Musahhar. Then when Imam Hussein gives him the letter to go to the heads of Basra, the heads of Basra hadn't really invited Imam Hussein to come. Kufans had invited him to come. But he wants to make sure there's no excuse left. He wants to make sure that his message reaches everyone. He says, I need somebody to go. And everyone knows what's going to happen to that person. Qais bin Musahhar. Not everyone's Qais. Qais volunteers. Qais takes this responsibility and fulfills it. He goes to Basra. And they say that they cut him to pieces. Not everyone is this person. Not everyone is that youth who Imam Ali said in the Battle of Jamal. He said, who's willing to go and get killed right in the beginning? And a youth stood up. The younger brothers, let me just say this. Your decisions in life count much more than others right now. The decisions you make now will impact you forever. It's not like me onwards who are, you know, starting to get a little bit old and the other ones who used to be young. It's not like that, guys. People told us this. We didn't take it serious. I'm telling you this. You're not going to take it serious. It's all good. That's just how it is, I guess. It's my fault. I should have listened when I was younger. This youth in the Battle of Jamal, Imam Ali says, who's ready to go to Jannah? And I guarantee it. SubhanAllah, what a good promise. A youth gets up, he says, I'm ready. He says, take this Quran, go in the middle, in between the ranks, in between the two armies, and say that we are fighting for Kitabullah. Let's see what Kitabullah says. And this youth does it, and they kill him right there on the spot. The enemy gets rid of him. You want another example? The Prophet says, I'm going to guarantee Jannah. Not even the Prophet. Amr bin Abdud, he says this in the Battle of Khandaq. He crosses the trench. He says, you say that your Prophet says that you go to Jannah if you get killed. Who wants to fight me and go to Jannah if he gets killed? And if he kills me, he goes to Jannah. Which youth stands up? Ya'sub al-Din, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam. Not everyone has this ma'rifah of imama. But what can Hussein do? Hussein, he just being Hussein is enough for people to fall in love with him. Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, Harun al-Rashid tells him, says, I've heard that you're the one that is taking bay'ah from people in secret. Is that true? The imam gives him an answer, once again to just make him quiet. He says, أنا إمام القلوب وأنت إمام الجسوم. You know what's wrong? Why people don't like you? People despise you. People could care less about giving you bay'ah. It's because I'm the imam of the hearts. You're the imam of the bodies. You rule the bodies. That's what it is. There's no secret to it. People were in love with Ahlul Bayt because they're Ahlul Bayt. Not even imama. Imama is something that we are figuring out after all these years. People back then, they were off. Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam. He is traveling all the way to Khurasan. And when he reaches the city of Nishapur, the people, they gather around his camel. And they ask, can we see you once? And he brings his head out. We want a hadith from you. O Imam al-Ridha. Did they all believe in his imama? Well, some of them were Shia, yes. But not everybody. And that's when he gives the famous hadith of the chain, the golden chain, Silsilatul Dhahab. Have we heard of that? Where they ask him for a hadith, everyone takes out their books and starts writing. Thousands of people. He brings his head up, the camel, the hawdaj of the camel, the carriage, and he says the hadith. He says, I heard my father say that his father said that his father said, this is why they call it the golden chain, that his father said, that Ali ibn Abi Talib said, that the Prophet said, that Jibreel said, that Allah says that kalimatu la ilaha illallah hisni, that la ilaha illallah and tawheed is my fortress, is my castle. فَمَنْ دَخَلَ حِسْنِي أَمِنَ مِنْ عَذَابِي, whoever enters this castle is safe. And he goes back into the carriage and everyone's writing down. But then the imam comes back out again and he says, oh, by the way, and I'm just adding that right now, by the way, بِشَرْطِهَا وَشُرُوطِهَا, there are conditions to this. وَأَنَا مِنْ شُرُوطِهَا, and I'm one of those conditions. Imama, of course. A person who knows that I am imam and neglects, they will not be benefiting from this la ilaha illallah. People are in love with the imams, with Ahlul Bayt. Imam al-Ridha again, one time they asked him after he made it to Khurasan, they said, can you lead the Eid prayer this year? And the imam says, no. They insist, the Khalifa insists he goes out to pray the Eid prayer. Just the fact that the son of the Prophet is coming out, everyone follows him. And it reaches a point that they tell the Khalifa, you better not let him lead the Eid prayer, or else after the Eid prayer is over, he'll be the new Khalifa. And they say, Oh Imam al-Ridha, now we know why you said don't let me do it. And they tell him to go back. And he does go back. And he doesn't end up leading the Eid prayer. Everyone is in love with Ahlul Bayt. Why? Because they have nur, the nur of Siyada, the nur, that Hashimite nur, that nur and nabawi and prophetic nur, they have it in them. Plus, some fall in love even more because they have the nur of imama. But not everyone has this. Not everyone sees this. And then you have number three. Why is it that people fall in love with them, listen to them? Because they speak with logic. They are a manifestation of Quran. And that's why Zuhair bin Qayn, he was avoiding the imam in the different stations that were close to Karbala. He didn't want to talk to Imam Hussein because he knew what Imam Hussein is going to tell him. But eventually it happened. And his wife pushed him to go when the messenger of Imam Hussein comes to Zuhair and says, come, Imam Hussein wants to speak to you. He says, no, I don't want to speak to Imam Hussein. His wife says, what are you talking about? This is the son of the Prophet you're rejecting? Zuhair goes. Now here we don't have anywhere in history what the imam says to Zuhair. But what's for sure is the imam speaks with logic. Very simple. He says, look at me. What do you see with me? Do you see Jannah or do you see Jahannam? You see Jannah, then Bismillah, come. This is my guess. He's a manifestation of the Quran. But now someone, you guys have every right to ask me this now. Someone will ask, then why is it that if these individuals, the imams, they are so convincing, they are a manifestation of Quran and logic and all of that, why is it that, for example, in the Battle of Jamal, they say Imam Ali said, I want to speak with Talha and Zubair. And they came so close to each other, the armies are ready. They came so close to each other that the narrations say that the horses' ears were either touching each other or were close to each other, the opposing horses. That's how close they got together. And the imam starts speaking to them. And he tells them, do you remember when the Prophet said this? Do you remember this? Do you remember that? Let me explain this. And why are they not convinced? Although they say Zubair was convinced, but his son later on caused problems. Abdullah bin Zubair. You guys have seen the movie of Mukhtar. You know what I'm talking about. Abdullah bin Zubair was one of those problematic ones in the Shia school. Very problematic. So why is it? Someone has this question, I give them every right. That if they are Ahlul Bayt, their personalities are so high, they speak with logic, then why is it that some people are not convinced? Imam Hussein on Ashura, did everyone not see his face? Yes. And as a matter of fact, they say his face was more radiant on Ashura than any other time. Did they not see him? Yes. Did he not speak to them? Yes. Well, what did he speak to them with? Quran, Hadith, and logic. What happened? What went wrong? This is a wake-up call for all of us before I get to our fourth question that we want to answer. The wake-up call goes like this. That we're sitting here 1400 years later. We want to take this home with us tonight, brothers. These are lessons that we have to think about and shake over. Now we're sitting here 1400 years later and we're saying what bad people they were. They turned away from the son of the prophet. They turned away from the imam of their time. They caused that tragedy and massacre and we're cursing them, disassociating from them, etc. Brothers, we need to wake up. What was wrong with those people of that time? They didn't see this? Yes, we're sitting here seeing it after all the research, all of the weeping and commemoration, all of the lectures and the ulama and the books of the ulama. What if we're sitting here 1400 years later and there are Husseins that we are turning away from? I'm just going to say this and move on. 100 years from now, I don't want to hear this if the imam hasn't come by then. 100 years from now, 200 years from now, when we're all dead, that some people will think and they'll say, what a people in 2016. What a people in 2016 and in the 21st century, that there was so-and-so and so-and-so and such-and-such. There were greats in their time that they abandoned. Those greats, what were their slogans? What were their causes? What were their initiatives? But lots of people, something that was this clear, they abandoned them. They undermined them and their authority. Something to think about. We're sitting here saying, oh, it's easy to fall in love with Hussein alayhi salam. 1400 years ago, how could the people be so off? Brothers, I'm telling you, who knows? So we need to do our research. We need to not necessarily listen to everything that's said online, for example. Look into things. Use the mind a little bit. But it's not all about the mind either. A mind that is not backed with taqwa will not ever have the measuring stick to be able to tell right from wrong. In tattaqullah yaj'al lakum furqana. Allah says, if you have my obedience and servitude day in and day out, that's when I will bless you with a measuring stick. And that's what brings me to number four. If the imams and Imam Hussein, they have everything you need to fall in love with, then what happened that some people did not fall in love? That some people did not become companions of them? This is for us today. What did these companions have? Risale Salawat. No, no, man. You guys. Risale Salawat, please. Apparently everyone is already knows what they gotta do and they've already done it, alhamdulillah. So I'm gonna talk to myself now from here on, okay? Three things that I can think about. Once again, they're the basic things. Three things that the companions had that made them so special. Three things, but I stress on it, basic. And to show what I mean by basic, I'm gonna give you a story, a made up story. Okay, a made up story. And the point I'm trying to make here is that the basic stuff is what counts. What are we talking about? Question number four. What was so special about these companions that they did fall in love? And what did the others not have that they didn't fall in love? Before getting into that though, is a little story. So we have somebody who is very, very obese. Very overweight. Now some people, it's not their fault. Some people, it is their fault. This person who it's their fault, and they know it, and they can do something about it, he wants to lose weight. So what does he do one day? He's online, you know, looking at a video, I don't know, like a fast food commercial or something he's watching, you know, because that's what he does. And then, all of a sudden, on the side, you know, he sees recommended for you. I don't know, for some reason, this video is recommended to him. And he looks at it, he sees someone that's very fit. The physique, oh my God. And he clicks on it. And then all of a sudden, it's one of those motivational videos of the guy pumping iron and the veins and the muscle and all that kind of stuff. And this person says, oh my God, this for me is worth more than all the burgers that I can ever have from here on, of course, because I've had a lot before this. And the donuts and all that kind of stuff. No matter how much this person thinks about it, he sits there, he pauses the video. And since he's really well off, he has another laptop too. And he opens that one. He puts a picture of donuts and fast food. So he keeps looking at this one, looks at that one. The physique, looks at this one, looks at that one. Thinks and thinks and thinks. And he eventually reaches the point that he says, I like this more than that. Okay. Step one, complete. Step two, this person now, after falling in love with something and giving priority to one thing, he makes a firm decision. What does he do? He goes to the cupboard. He goes to the kitchen. And he gets rid of everything that he's not supposed to eat anymore. A firm decision is made. Step two, complete. And then what? What does he do? Well, he shouldn't throw it away because it's israf, right? At least give it to the poor. We'll give it to the poor because he's Muslim. Step three, after he makes the firm decision, he doesn't lose all the weight overnight. No. Patience, my friend. You gotta go on. It's a 24/7 thing. It's a way of life. So he cuts all of that out and he continues for a long time. In other words, he exhibits patience in order to fulfill what he's after. Okay, that's my story. I know it's very boring. But there's a point in it. That the same basic stuff. Well, did I say something like out of the world, out of this world? A special diet pill? No, no. It's all about those three. Setting your priorities straight, making the decision, and moving towards your goals and having the patience for it. Very simple. Same thing with these ashab, you see. What did they do? First of all, they don't have love of dunya more than akhirah. This is dangerous. I'm not saying they don't have love of dunya. They like dunya. If Zuhair bin Qain, he doesn't want to see Imam Hussein, whatever it's for, it's probably because he doesn't want to lose his life, he doesn't want to lose his wealth, or his comfort, one of these, right? But at the same time, he has more love for akhirah. Probably, Imam Hussein just shook him a little bit and said, wake up. Which one do you love more? Just reminded him. They didn't have love of akhirah less than dunya, or more dunya than akhirah. They didn't have that. On the other hand, though, you find Umar ibn Sa'd. And this is something we have to work on. Just be careful about this. Some other night, inshallah, since this is a practical thing that we have to talk about and fix in our lives, I might talk about this some other night. I hate it when it sounds cliche. I hate it. Brother, you must not love dunya more than akhirah. I know that. Explain. Dissect it a little bit. No, there's ways, brothers. There's an equation and formula to this, that if you don't do it, no matter how much you tell yourself you hate the dunya, it's not going to happen. Okay. I'm not saying hate it. Like it less than the akhirah. Umar ibn Sa'd was also put in this situation, but he has love of akhirah less. What does he do? He says, I can't give up. He says it. I see myself between Jannah and Nar. But which am I going to choose? I'm going to choose Ray. The city of Ray. I want to be governor of Ray. They have promised me that I can be governor of Ray. And oh my God, Ray is such an apple of the eye. He says this. Qurratul Ayn. He says, I see it there. So that's one problem that he had. The guy that was watching the motivational video, what happens? He compares two things. He compares macho and he compares donut. And he says, I want macho more. This here in our story now of Karbala, you choose akhirah or you choose dunya. You got to choose one. I'm sorry. Now you choose one. Yeah, you say, I love akhirah more. I've read Quran and I see that, yes, there's stuff there that I like. Eternity and infinity, as I've been saying all along. But step number two, I kind of lack in a firm decision now. You got to be a man. You got to step up. if you're not a man and you don't make the firm decision, it doesn't matter that you have love of this. It doesn't matter. You're not going to get where you want to get to. Brothers, this is important now. It's important that the firm decision we have to understand is not something that can be explained anymore. The whole test is right here. Is right here. يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ They know it's there. Just gotta make the decision. You're not seeing it. If we see Jannah, we know it. If we see it, we'll make a firm decision. The whole test is here. You know it's there. You haven't seen it though. But you know it's there. You have to make a decision now. Don't come up to me as some people do and say, teach me how to make a decision. There is no teaching to make a decision. Making decisions is happens when you sit down and think for a while that I want this over that, and you make a decision. All these people, all these weight loss stories that we find, all these people who put on 10, 20 pounds of muscle, I don't know over how many years, did it happen easily? No, it was hard. They hate every second of training, as they say. But they make a firm decision. Why? Because they sit down and think, do I want to be like this forever? No, I don't want to be like this forever. And they make that change. Make that decision. There is no ABCs to making decisions. You make it because you sit down and think. And that's why they say in a hadith that the greatest worship of Abu Dharr alayhi rahmah was tafakkur. He would think. Because the thinking that he uses, it affects him in his life. That's why the hadith say that sometimes tafakkuru sa'a, thinking for a little bit, is worth 70 years of ibadah. This might be one of the instances. Because you change your life forever. Don't say, teach me how to make a decision. Yes, there are some things that help you in making a decision. For example, the guy who wants to lose weight, he doesn't want to sit in a restaurant with all the good foods and it just so happens to be halal. Because you remember, we said he's Muslim, right? It just so happens to be halal. This person, now you stand. No, he can't do that. He goes somewhere where he won't see these things for a while. After a while, maybe he'll be able to even resist when he sees these things. Decisions are like that too. Yes, if you hang around people that could care less about Akhirah, then don't go to Allah on the Day of Judgment and be like, oh, I was influenced. You should have stayed away. Allah gave us Akhirah for a reason. You can facilitate the decision, but the decision, remember this from me, brothers, that the decision, that is where the test is, right there, boom. And once you make the right decision and you exercise it, it's like that little bit of muscle that you have that you keep exercising. It gets stronger. It gets stronger. It grows just like the muscle. You see scrawny people, after 2 years, the guy is jacked. And his name is Jack too. Why? Because that little strand and of muscle that he had, he used that slowly, very slowly it grew. When you make the right decision and you exercise your willpower, it strengthens. The second time will be a little easier. The third time a little easier. It won't be totally easy because then it's not a test anymore. Some people, they stay away from one instance of haram. They want everything to finish. Now I'm Ayatul Bahjat. No. Which brings me to number three now. So number one, what was it? Number one is to get your priorities straight and to fall in love with that which you have to fall in love with. And if you have love to other things, you have a little bit less. Number one. Number two, make a firm decision. And then this is where number three now comes in. Patience. Just because I stayed away from haram today, tomorrow, the next day, doesn't mean I'm off the hook now. Doesn't mean I've reached a level that I can boast about now. No, you take it to the grave. That same person who's on a diet 20 years, after 20 years, if he lets go, what happens? It'll all come back. It's happened before to myself. It comes back. It's an ongoing thing. It's like the treadmill, guys. You got to keep running or you fall off. That's how this world is designed. Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam, them girls came around him. Sometimes you say, I'll stay away from it this one time and I'll suck it in and I'll... No, they kept coming, guys, again and again, every day, every day. You've seen it in that movie. Although some people joke about this. They say, yeah, the ones in the movie, they're so ugly, we would have stayed away too. But no, the ones that were coming to him, the test was like this, brothers. That it's going to happen again and again and again. And Prophet Yusuf is staying away from them. Once won't cut it. And then in the end of his story, Prophet Yusuf, when he wants to conclude from his whole story, after his parents have finally come to Misr and Egypt, and they all reunite and are rejoicing, and they do that famous sajda that the Quran talks about, Prophet Yusuf, he says, this is the interpretation of my dream that I saw as a kid. And then he concludes from his whole life story. What does he say? He says, إِنَّهُ مَنْ يَتَّقِ وَيَصْبِرْ فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُضِيعُ أَجْرَ الْمُحْسِنِينَ. Whoever, after 100 verses, brothers, he concludes that whoever is obedient to Allah and has taqwa of Allah and has patience, فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُضِيعُ أَجْرَ الْمُحْسِنِينَ. This is the secret of the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that they had their priorities set. 1, 2, they made a firm decision at the right time, unlike others, unlike Fir'aun, who he made the right decision but at the wrong time when he's drowning. The Quran says, now are you going to make the right decision? Now it's too late. Now the curtains have been removed and you're seeing the truth. Now you're making this decision, it doesn't count then. And number 3, of course, the patience that they exhibited. Now, someone will say right here, they'll say, oh my God, but we keep failing so much in this journey that we have towards Allah. We keep failing. Brothers, tawbah, the door to tawbah has been left open for a reason. God knows how He created us. God knows we're going to fail, we're going to fall. The point is to get back up with tawbah. What is tawbah? How do I know my tawbah is accepted? Very simple. Tawbah, and this is what ulama say. Let's not go to the sources when the ulama are saying something else. The ulama look at all of the sources and they give us an answer. Some people go to the harshest and hardest forms of tawbah and they say, this is tawbah. Yes, the imams have said this, but that's not for you. That's for Ayatollah Behjet if he messes up. Some people think they're Ayatollah Behjet. That's for Ayatollah Behjet. For us, me, kindergarten of spirituality, they have said, tawbah means that when you mess up, you say, Allah, I'm sorry, man. And I'm willing to come back. And I'm going to try. Well, how do I know it's accepted? If you never go back to it, that means it was accepted, they say. If you go back, it wasn't accepted, but you have another chance. But you got to be honest to Allah and yourself. We're not playing a game here. We only have one shot, one life. I'll do tawbah later. You got to try. So tawbah is always open to the doors. So question number 4, what did these companions have? I would say they didn't have anything super special. They just had the basics down. Question number five. What about us? What do we do now for the imam of our time so that we are a companion of his? The answer is very clear. The same thing the companions of Imam Hussein did. I've been talking for so long, we should have understood this by now. That I'm going to also sit down and think a little bit. What are my priorities? What do I want eventually? Do I want infinity and eternity or not? And I'm going to make a decision. I don't have to go through what the companions of the Imam went through. But what I do have to do is to constantly win in the struggle that I have every day. So that when those big decisions come, I can make the right decisions. Follow with me here, guys. Follow with me. Brothers. Another story. You want to hear another boring story? Since no one nodded, I'm going to do it. I'm going to say it. There's this guy. I forgot the story. There's this guy. He wants to participate in a weightlifting contest. So what does he do? He watches motivational videos every day till the weightlifting contest. And when that day comes, he steps on that stage and he grabs the bar, and that's about as much as he can do. Why? Because he didn't take care of the basics. I want you to listen to this equation that I'm going to lay out for you. And then we'll end. And this is what we want to take tonight. What am I supposed to do? This is exactly what we're supposed to do. Where do you get this from? Common sense, Quran, Hadith, everything. That if you want to lift that heavy weight, you have to have trained before. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they say, has promised us, even in the Quran, that He's going to test us. A few times in the year, He'll test us. A big test. He'll put a step in front of you. And I've spoken about this elsewhere. It's important. He will put a step in front of you so that you can step on it, go higher, get closer to Him, right? Someone's eyes are closed. He trips over the step. And then he looks at God. He's like, really? Why'd you put this step in front of me? Allah says, listen, I brought you here for these steps that you're supposed to step on and go up more. It takes a little bit of effort. Open your eyes and, you know, push a little bit and you'll make it. Why'd you put it there? That's what creation was for. That's why I brought you into a material world for. These steps are going to come in front of you. It's like a Mario game. You got to jump over those green thingies. This was a game we played 20 years ago. You gotta jump. It's not His fault that your eyes are closed. Now let's come and see what we're talking about now. I want to be a companion of the Imam. Very good, very well, very, very, very well. Pass the tests that are put your way. How do I pass those big tests? You don't just step on the stage and start pulling at a heavy bar. You train before. Allah knows that we need training. That's what the everyday wajib and harams are for. Please understand this, brothers. The everyday wajib and haram of Allah, it does wonders. A person who is constantly, repeatedly, throughout the day, remembering before he does anything, is this haram or not? No, it's not. Okay, we'll do it. It's all good. Just this is strengthening that person's iman to the extent that when the tougher tests come, he's been through the drill before and he knows what he's supposed to do. But the person who has not made this his second nature as if, and is struggling here, when the test comes, he fails for sure. For sure, a person who has been struggling when it comes to training is going to fail when the test comes. Brothers, every single day of us, and this is what I said a few nights ago, that Labbaik Ya Hussein, this is what it really means. That every haram that comes up in the day, one after another, you put aside. Every wajib that comes up, I do it. Why are you doing it? Because he said so. End of story. If you do this every day, and if when you fail, you say, sorry Allah, I'm going to get back on my feet, and you do get back on your feet, and you try your best. This person, inshallah, when the tests come, they will pass. And if they fail those big tests, Allah will give them another chance, because He sees that they're trying. He'll take their hand eventually. Ulama have said this, I've heard it from them. That Allah will take their hand even in the big tests and will help them cross, inshallah. So we talked about tonight the companions of Abu Abdullah. What made them so special? What was special about Abu Abdullah? Why they were able to take and embrace Abu Abdullah when he came to them? And what we are supposed to do in our lives so that when the tests come up, we can also pass those tests. Recite a salawat. Assalamu alaykum ya Abu Abdullah. One of those individuals that teaches us, in practice teaches us, that it is possible to fix things even when they're in the worst situation, in the worst state. He teaches us that tawbah till the last moments, when you're still qualified for tawbah, he teaches us that you can do it. He teaches us that if you make the right decision, even in the last moments, it's all good. Alhamdulillah, for Hur bin Yazid al-Riyahi alayhi salam, alayhi rahma? Do you think his sin was small? Do you think what he did was insignificant? If it wasn't for Hur, the whole story of Karbala would have been different. If it wasn't for Hur, if Abu Abdullah al-Husayn had made it to Karbala, the story would have been, to Kufa, it would have been different. Sure, the people betrayed Muslim. Sure, the people, they were against Imam Husayn, although they liked him, but they liked the dunya more. Sure, all of that. But if Imam Husayn had made it to Kufa in time, there was a good chance of things changing. Because when you see this Imam, and then you see all the people that are going to surround him, you'll also take his side. And the numbers will be high. But what did Hur do? Hur committed something that till today there might still be some people who might kind of be upset with him for it. As this caravan of Abu Abdullah is getting closer and closer to Kufa, they see that from a far distance an army is coming of 1,000 soldiers, and they're coming full speed. It's the army of Hur. And Hur intercepts this caravan, stops them. And when they arrive, they're panting. The horses are panting. The soldiers are panting. Here, Abu Abdullah. This is Abu Abdullah, brothers. Ya Abu Abdullah, I'm surprised that some people don't die out of your kindness. You're killing us, Abu Abdullah, with your kindness. Abu Abdullah orders his people to quench the thirst of these animals, to quench the thirst of these soldiers. Is that not enough, brothers? Do you want Abu Abdullah to kill us through his kindness? They say, Abu Abdullah, he sees one of these soldiers, he's so thirsty, and he's in such a rush to get this water into his body, that the water sack that he's holding, the water is coming out from the sides. It's not going in his mouth completely. He's having trouble drinking. What does Abu Abdullah do? Abu Abdullah comes and opens this water sack for him. He says, give it to me. Give it to me, O you who's going to deny me water on the 10th of Muharram. He's probably saying this in his heart. Give it to me, let me help you. And he opens it in a way that this person can drink from this water. They quench the thirst of these animals too. The horses. Ya Allah, Ya Sahib al-Zaman, forgive me for saying this. But was Abu Abdullah's life not worth as much as these things that they gave water to? That on Ashura, when Imam Hussein, according to some narrations, he says, I'm thirsty. When he's all alone, they say, you will not drink until you drink from the fire and the waters of the boiling waters of Jahannam. Na'udhu billah. Hur intercepts the army, the caravan, and he says to them that the Amir has said that you're not allowed to go to Kufa. Brothers, you want me to say something to add to the madlumiyyah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam? Imam Hussein here, he says, let us go back to Medina. Let us go somewhere else then, at least, if you're not going to let us go to Kufa, and that you've been told to not allow us to go and to go in another direction, let us go back. Hur says, no, I have orders to keep you. And you have to dwell in the desert. You wanna add to the madlumiyyah? I have heard some Wahhabis. La ilaha illallah. I have heard Wahhabis say this personally. That they say that Imam Hussein said, at least let me go to Sham and give bay'ah to Yazid. Is this the Imam Hussein that we know? Let's move on. Let's go to the 10th of Muharram. Let's learn a lesson from Hur. Hur sees on the 10th of Muharram. Excuse me, before we go to the main story is here. The main story is here. Let's not go to the 10th of Muharram. Imam Hussein knows what's happening when he has been intercepted and this caravan is denied entry into Kufa. Imam Hussein, he says, let me go here, let me go there. And Hur says, no. You're not allowed to go anywhere. Hussein alayhi salam gets angry and he uses an expression that the Arabs would use back then. Thakalatka ummuk. How dare you not let us go back? May your mother weep for you. he makes mention of the mother of Hur. Not in a bad way, of course. He uses this expression. He makes mention. He doesn't say anything bad about the mother. What does Hur say in return? La ilaha illallah. This is where it all boils down to, brothers. He says, if anyone else had mentioned my mother, I would have made sure to retaliate. But what can I say? That your mother is Fatima to Zahra alayhi salam. I will not retaliate. And he bottles it up. Ahsant Hur, you passed the test. Now let's go to the 10th of Muharram. Hur sees that the armies are coming. Left and right, they're surrounding and tightening the siege on Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Water has been cut off for the last 3 days now. It's happening. Umar ibn Sa'd, are you actually going to do this? Umar ibn Sa'd says, we're going to do this and we're going to make sure heads roll on the grounds. We're going to make blood shed the way that never has been shed. Hur sees himself between Jannah and Nar. Hur, teach us a lesson now. And this is where he makes the historical decision. Brothers, let's make a firm decision in our lives. He makes that decision. They say he moves towards Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam, but not in a normal state. They say, according to some reports, that he went barefoot when he was reaching the camp of Abu Abdullah. He dismounts his horse. He walks barefoot. He puts his shoes around his neck. He takes off his helmet. He puts sand in his hair. He comes to Abu Abdullah. Oh, Abu Abdullah, halli min tawbah? Is there any repentance and return for me? Hussein once again is killing with his kindness. He says, don't even talk about these things, they say. Don't worry about it. But I struck fear into the hearts of your children. If it wasn't for me, Karbala wouldn't have happened. It's okay, you still made it in time, Hur. Don't worry. Come down, let me embrace you. Hur says, no, I want to go and be the first to die because of what I've done. Hur, if you want to really sacrifice yourself though, if I were you, I would stay a little longer with Aba Abdullah to see when Ali ibn al-Asghar is in the hands of Aba Abdullah. Hussein is doing you a favor by letting you go first. If you're making this decision, I'm going to favor you by letting you go, and you don't see what happens to my Asghar. You don't see what happens to my Qasim. You don't see what happens to my companions. Hur goes, a valiant warrior. He fights till his death and he falls, only to see Abu Abdullah next to him. Ya Hussein, will you come to our bodies when we're leaving this world? Ya Abu Abdullah, we are sorry for what we've done in our lives. We want to come back. And we are sure you will accept, or else we wouldn't be in the majlis of Abu Abdullah. Abu Abdullah is next to him, brothers. As Hur is leaving this world, he's probably thinking to himself, did Hussein accept my tawbah? Hussein says, "An innaka hurrun kama sammatka ummuk." You are free as your mother named you. And as these eyes are closing, ya brothers, as these eyes of Hur are closing, maybe Abu Abdullah in his heart is saying this, that Hur, if you had disrespected my mother, you would have never made it to this point. Very well, very good to you. Congratulations, oh Hur, you made the decision you were supposed to make. But in Medina, there were some, unlike you, who kept the respect of my mother. When they heard the voice of my mother behind the door, instead of keeping her respect, they kicked the door in, my feeble and weak mother, between the door and the wall. Not only did they disrespect her like so, but when she was all hanging on to the belt of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Mughayra, take out the sheath of your sword and beat the arm of my mother so much till she let go of Ali. If it wasn't for them beating my mother, Ali wouldn't have been dragged with Rose. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. ماتم الحسين يا حسين.